Hey everyone, welcome to the Real Evidence Podcast, where we talk about the digital evidence landscape and how people, processes, and technology unite towards restorative justice. My name is Myron.
And I'm Ashley, and today it's just going to be the two of us talking through digital evidence, what that is, and the people that use digital evidence and the challenges that they face in that process.
Awesome. And I think we could start with just let's define digital evidence. So there is a working definition of this that is provided by the National Institute of Justice. And I'm just going to go ahead and read this off. It says digital evidence is information stored or transmitted in binary form that may be relied on in court. Another way to say that, and I think another definition that's actually a little bit more helpful, is digital evidence is really any information or data of value to an investigation that is central to an electronic device, has come from some sort of electronic device. So that's sort of a working definition. Again, it's kind of straightforward if you're familiar with the digital landscape, but we felt it important just to have a definition to work from. So with that, let's dive a little bit more into who handles digital evidence. Ashley, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so digital evidence, because it is such an integral part to cases these days, a lot, I would say most of court cases that are tried now rely on digital evidence. Because of that, a lot of different people handle digital evidence, starting from the point of collecting that evidence, who is providing that evidence to the investigative agencies that are working on that case. So primarily law enforcement offices and prosecution offices that are working on cases.
Right. I think it's safe to say too, like, think of the full life cycle of digital evidence. So we're starting off with this working definition, maybe a little bit of the who's, the how's, just creating a landscape. And then as we go through this episode, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about the challenges people face in managing digital evidence and dealing with digital evidence. And Ashley, I know, you know, you have a lot of expertise in this area as well, just over time of working with a platform like Guardify of digital evidence. But like I said, there is a life cycle to this. And sometimes the most helpful way to do this is to think of the journey of something. And in this case, the journey of digital evidence. So there's a crime that happens. And then when that crime happens, and it, we'll get to this as well in statistics, but digital evidence is present in more than, well over more than half of the cases that are out there today from a criminal case standpoint. So when that crime happens, things like photos, pictures are taken, cell phones, CCTV, all of that good stuff. And so the life cycle kind of goes from what is the collection of that evidence look like as it relates to case preparation? So getting a case prepared to take the case through the entire judicial system, all the way from how is that evidence being handled? So how is it being taken off of a phone? You know, you think of a forensics team in a law enforcement office. They're going to sit down and they're going to hook those up, get all the evidence off of phones, tablets, whatever, what have you. Any type of body worn cam type stuff is going to get collected. Then there's classification of that. So how is this evidence going to get classified? How can we ensure that, you know, over time there's a clear trail of where that evidence came from, the device, all of the mechanics on that. I can tell you, Ashley, we've talked about this. We're not experts in all of things digital evidence in terms of hashing and how to ensure all that happens. So we'd love to hear from other people who are listening who maybe have more experience in that. So again, the life cycle starts, it's being captured, it's being collected. Then there kind of goes through an analysis phase. Classification becomes a part of that, as mentioned. And then we also get into how is that evidence being transported and acquired by different people. So essentially sharing, right? How are people getting access to that? Who are the right people getting access to that digital evidence as it moves throughout the rest of the life cycle? Ultimately finding its home either in some sort of a storage form, right? This is going to get stored for X period of time, depending on what the matter is. If it goes to court, that's a different part of the life cycle. Now that evidence needs to be, submitted into court, and there needs to be a trail of that throughout the entire process of the investigation. So it ends with this sort of analysis, reporting, and presentation phase of things. So again, capturing, analyzing, condensing all that together, classifying that, transporting and sharing that, and then ultimately reporting and presenting that digital evidence. So that's sort of a high flyby of just a general or one way to think about the life cycle of digital evidence. But at the core of this conversation is what are the challenges that many people, and we say many people, we talked about the people who kind of have a hand in digital evidence as it moves throughout its life cycle. what are the challenges they face? So Ashley, maybe you can kick this one off for us and just jump into sort of the first big thing that we want to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. So when we were breaking this down into what those challenges are, we kind of wanted to break it down in relation to the life cycle of that evidence. So starting with, where is that evidence coming from and how is it getting to where it needs to go? And with that, there's a huge risk for data breach and tampering of evidence in that collection process. When digital evidence is being transferred from the source or where it is collected to where it is going to be ingested, it's highly vulnerable in that transmission process, mainly based on traditional transfer methods like USB drives or email or external hard drives just being very insecure places to store evidence. Things like password protection are not enough to make sure that that protection is maintained for that evidence. There's actually a policy called FIPS 140-2 from the Federal Information Processing Standard that says that there is a minimum security requirement of encryption on that type of evidence. So when law enforcement agencies or when prosecution offices are considering transferring that evidence from one place to another, they have to keep protection standards like that in mind. Along with that transmission is, where are they putting that evidence once it has been collected? So where are they storing it? After that's been collected, taking it places, like I said, keeping it on hard drives or keeping it on USB drives is not enough. So things like case management systems or evidence management systems come into play that provide that extra layer of protection that is required for that evidence management.
Yep. So this kind of begs a little bit of the difference between what is a digital evidence management platform versus a case management platform. And this is something we hear about in our space as we talk with people. They're similar in some ways and they're different. But again, these are two technologies that oftentimes are coming alongside to help think about, you know, how do we better store digital evidence? On a high level, digital evidence management platforms are really focused on just that. Digital evidence management. They're focused on the evidence, the files, the processing of those files, the access controls around that specific evidence. Case management, on the other hand, sometimes does overlap with that, but a lot more emphasis on the full journey of sort of an entire case. So case creation all the way to how is that evidence going to get submitted into court? And not just the evidence, but all of the according sort of documentation files, the filing itself. So digital evidence can include up to a lot of the life cycle of what case management focuses on. But a lot of the times it's really more focused just on what is the heart of sort of the evidence of the case and bringing transparency, access controls, and all of that to that. So just a good pit stop to kind of maybe talk a little bit there about the technology. Let's jump into the next challenge on this, Ashley, as we've talked about this, is sort of the diversity and the types and the volume of evidence. So I'll kind of start on this one. And we hit on this a little bit earlier where we talked about, you know, sort of think of the journey of evidence, right? There's a crime that happens. Maybe it's in a public space. There's people who've observed the crime. Maybe they had their cell phones out. There's maybe the CCTV footage from a camera on the street. There's body worn cams. So the point here is there is a wide diversity, a large spectrum of types of digital evidence that might be included in a case, as well as a large volume of that evidence, depending on the type of crime it was, where it occurred. So we can't necessarily say there's one way to think about this, but the point is there is a lot, the volume of digital evidence over the last decade, probably many behind that, maybe two decades, but for sure in the last decade has increased a ton. And so one of the things I talked about earlier was digital evidence is a factor in well over half of the criminal cases. In fact, I think there was a study, and I'll put this link into the show notes, that 90% of cases in 2021, digital evidence was a factor in. So we're going to probably continue to see that, right? This isn't a new shock in terms of sort of the world we live in and everything being digital and everybody having a mini computer in their pocket, among many other things. And so this kind of does, again, kind of bring out the need of with all of these little collection points in an ecosystem going on, how is all that being brought in? I think, again, about going back to the life cycle, being brought in, collected, analyzed, categorized, labeled, all of those things. On top of that, and this is something that we've hit on a little bit in prior episodes, is we kind of refer to it in the technology space as metadata. So any type of file that comes in, any type of evidence that comes in, there's sort of a meta narrative behind that, right? There's where did it occur? What type of file is it? What are the attributes of the file? And then that, how does that relate to a case where there's even more metadata? You know, who are the participants, the parties in the case, all of the data, where did it occur? What counties, what judicial district, all of those things become part of sort of a metadata view. And AI is actually one of those tools right now, one of those technologies right now coming into the space that's saying, hey, it's actually really good at helping with the analysis, making sense of large amounts of metadata. And so along with this challenge of diversity and types and volume of evidence comes this reality that this is going to be a space that's going to get disrupted. It's already, we're already seeing this, but it's going to continually get disrupted in terms of seeing who, you know, who's going to come into this space that is going to leverage AI to help make ultimately the process of an investigation or the process of discovery or the process of making sense of a lot of different angles of different types of digital evidence, maybe videos of a crime, a lot more streamlined. So a little bit of a ramble there, but that's diversity of types, volume of evidence. What's next, Ashley? So we've talked about risk of data breaching, diversity in types and volume of evidence. What's the next challenge?
So who has access to evidence? Who is managing the access of that evidence? It's a big factor in investigating and also presenting cases like this that handle a lot of volume of evidence. There's actually security standards. There are security really criminal justice related standards that that require evidence to only be accessed by allowed personnel. So with how evidence is managed, that people also have to consider how they are sharing and who has access to that evidence. So when they are considering where this evidence is being stored, they have to be able to easily give role-based access to users or people that they're sharing evidence with, and also be able to very easily and securely define which evidence is being shared. So on a case basis, on an even file basis, how long and what type of access people have access to that internet, that evidence.
Yep. Yeah. And I think something in there too, like, do you think it's, I mean, that varies, right? In terms of just sort of workflow expectations, what are some of the factors that, you know, from your experience, even that go into somebody who's sort of the main, the primary holder of the evidence and the factors that go into them making decisions on who gets access, when they get access, how long they get access, those types of things, what's there?
I think it relates entirely to the case itself. So mm-hmm. who is investigating the case and who on both sides of the table. So on prosecution and on the defense side, there's limitations to who is able to access what types of evidence. So there's non-discoverable evidence. There's evidence that is handled just by the investigative agencies. Mm-hmm. And there's also the process of identifying the evidence. So as it's coming through to, let's say, the prosecution office, they need to be able to define the people in that office that have access to the evidence so that it can be sorted and labeled and assigned. And then they also have to be able to assign evidence after the fact, once it has been ingested, to the people that need access to it.
I see. Which is interesting to think about, right? Because there's maybe even like behind that are a couple key things that I think are maybe like the meta questions being asked, right? Do I have all the evidence? Like, that's one big question. And that's a, you know, that's also a challenge slash, you know, there's a lot of talk in the space around how is technology, but how do our workflow, how do our processes ensure that we feel confident that we've collected everything and we have everything, we're not missing anything, which is a little different than, like you're saying, when it goes into a prosecution office, you know, there's a different question in there of like, what is of evidentiary value? Mm-hmm. Going back to sort of our working definition, you know, information or data that has value towards an investigation, ultimately a case. So there's a lot of evidence. There's a lot of different things going on there, whether they're documents, pictures, videos, what have you. And somebody is sitting there in that midst of stuff saying, this is of evidentiary value. This is what I mm-hmm. want to highlight. And I think the other thing that you mentioned in there goes back to kind of the transfer thing, which is, you know, kind of regardless of who's getting access, when they're getting access, and the ability to have control over that, that's important, but also being able to be clear and provide transparency about where has all this evidence gone, right. Who has seen it, who has, you know, accessed it, who viewed it, when did they view it, what went on with it. It's interesting to think about this. This might be something we can talk about in the future. It's interesting to think about where this landscape, where this world is going of digital evidence, especially with things like, you know, hey, the ability to fake videos, whether they're deep fakes, the ability to tamper with, sometimes not even intentionally, which will lead us into our next challenge here in a second. But there's going to be maybe a hyper scrutiny. There already is, but I think there's going to continue to be a hyper scrutiny on how can we get better at ensuring that there's a very clear, transparent narrative of every piece of evidence, where it started to where it is today, and what that journey has been. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and I think audit logs play a big role in that too. So with that access, when you're giving certain people access to either provide evidence to you, either limited access so that they can just give the evidence and not necessarily access the evidence, it gives you a paper trail on where did this evidence come from, who provided it, what happened with that evidence once it was provided. So audit logs and chain of custody comes into play there as well.
Right. Yep. Awesome. Well, let's talk about the next challenge, which is something I think we can all relate to. It's human error. And so this is found everywhere, right? And the point that we're trying to make out here is again, if you're in this space and if you're dealing with digital evidence, you've probably experienced this. It's less about sort of the malicious intent of human error, meaning like somebody who's trying to tamper. And it's really more about what are the things that just happened that you're not necessarily aware of as you're handling evidence that can impact how that evidence gets used in a case. So this is things like mislabeling, miscategorizing. When we go back to the life cycle, there's sort of that collection and the categorization of that evidence, which comes with labeling that evidence. And so there is a mislabeling, which means that ends up somewhere where it's not supposed to be, and maybe the right eyes don't get on that. There's also accidentally altering or deleting. And so in this one, just to give an example here, this has been true in the past where videos that are downloaded or exported can actually lose frames as they're downloaded and exported. So the quick dive here is a video is really just made up of a lot of individual frames of something happening, moving at a certain rate. And so when they're downloaded, you can lose frames. And that can in fact have an implication towards making that inadmissible as evidence in court. And this is also sort of comes from The Guardian, which I'll post in the show notes. People can go through and look at some of the different stats related to this. So human error is definitely one of the challenges. Sharing things that are non-discoverable, as we talked about, you can classify that, whether it's sensitive, non-discoverable. So there's a lot of different ways that, again, not necessarily somebody working maliciously or with a bad intent, but they can just have some sort of an impact towards actually how that evidence gets used, which goes back to the importance of sort of that whole trail, right? Of understanding who has interfaced with this, what did they do? Human error is the fifth one. And our last one, Ashley, I'm really interested to talk about this one. So why don't you lead us into that?
Yeah. So one of the big challenges that I actually hear about a lot from people that I work with on a regular basis, primarily in prosecution offices, is presenting and preparing evidence for court. Yeah. So a lot of times, if evidence is handled incorrectly or it's just not managed properly, it can be deemed inadmissible due to just any number of problems that happened in the life cycle of that evidence. So there's a lot of that goes into making sure that they're ready to present that evidence as it is to a courtroom. And that can be as simple as making sure that they're aware of what the technological limitations are in a courtroom, if they're able to take evidence as is and present it digitally, or if they have to somehow present a hard copy of that, whether that be printing it out or taking still frames of videos or whatever the case may be there. So there's a very large uphill battle to figuring out exactly what those limitations are before it even gets into the courtroom.
Yep. Yeah. And I think, what's interesting too, is to think about, the amount of cases where digital evidence is becoming important to the outcome of that case. And then also to sort of be sober-minded and be realistic about the reality of how is technology really being leveraged in the courtroom? You know, sort of regardless of how whether that's right or wrong, it's really not being leveraged that much on a large scale across all courtrooms, and technology being specifically how is software coming into those things? How am I presenting, you know, digital evidence from a software standpoint, whether that's like a computer or tablet? So there's a wide array. And this falls into the bucket of, I know for sure, I wouldn't say I'm an expert in this. I think we have a high level understanding. If you're listening to this, and you want to chime in and give us some feedback, if you want to kind of riff on, and even maybe even potentially coming on to an episode to talk about what does it look like to actually take evidence all the way into court? What are the challenges? What are the things that you have to consider? We would love to hear that. So this sort of brings us to the conclusion of this particular episode. Again, this was just a high level with a little bit of diving in on what is digital evidence management? What are some of the challenges faced? We were hoping that people who didn't have that sort of category or mental model to work from now have it. And again, if you're in this space and this is something that, you're well versed in, give us your feedback. What did we miss? What is something that is critically important that we just completely left out? Where would you elaborate on? We would love to hear that as well. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. You can find this podcast on all platforms where you find your podcast. Please go out, subscribe, consider subscribing and sharing with your friends. In future episodes, we're definitely looking to get guests back on the show. We have a lineup there. This was just, again, a short episode to kind of pit stop and provide some more context to the digital evidence landscape. You can definitely find the podcast if you aren't interested. We do have a new page up. It's real-evidence-podcast. This will all be in the show notes. And if you're interested in talking with someone from Guardify, if you're looking for a digital evidence management solution, we have a team of excellent people who would love to chat with you. One of those is myself as a product person, but you can reach out to us again, either on our website or you can email sales@guardify.com. Ashley, thanks for this conversation, for sharing a lot of the expertise. This has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely.